Welcome to Biblical Higher Ed Talk, where we tap into the wisdom of leaders and practitioners of biblical higher education for the advancement of colleges and universities teaching the way of Christ in the modern world. Each week, we'll tackle topics around leading your organization, expanding your impact in the world, and deepening your faith through Christ-centered conversations. Ready to make a difference in the lives of your faculty, staff, and students? Then let's begin our journey.
Today on Biblical Higher Ed Talk, I sit down with Kent Anderson, president of Providence University College in Otterburn, Manitoba, and Greg Henson, president of Kairos University in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to talk about their new book, Theological Education: Principles and Practices of a Competency-Based Approach. Learn what CBTE is and how it very well could set a new trajectory for biblical and theological education. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm your host, Philip Dearborn, president of ABHE. And we're honored to have as our guests this week, Kent Anderson, president of Providence University College in Otterburn, Manitoba, and Greg Henson, president of Kairos University, located in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, with additional offices throughout North America. Both Kent and Greg have been on the cutting edge of competency-based theological education for the last several years, and they've co-authored a book together titled Theological Education, Principles and Practices of a Competency-Based Approach, which tells the story of what exactly CBTE is, with some practical insights based on their experiences in pioneering the competency-based approach in theological education. And I've invited both of them in to talk about their book. So Greg and Kent, welcome to the show. So to kick us off, just so our audience can get to know you a little bit, as you reflect back over your life, share with us a catalytic moment that God used to propel you forward in your life. And we'll start with Kent and then go to Greg.
Sure. That's a big question. There are so many things that came to mind, but I'll go with something relatively recent. I had thought that I was nearing the latter stages of my career. You know, I thought I was just going to retire at the school I'd been at for 26 years. And then God came along and challenged me to step up to something new and different. And so at 60 years of age, I took on the opportunity here at Providence, which is both a university and a seminary, and really expanded my horizons of what it was, how it was possible to use my sense of gifting and calling. I tried to say no, but here I am, and I'm grateful that God saw something more in me, even at a time when I thought maybe I could start easing off the throttle a little bit. Instead, I'm putting my foot to the floor, it seems.
I love that, Ken. And it's interesting, I ask all the guests that question, and I would say a good 95% of the time, the response is a catalytic moment early on in life that set a trajectory forward. So I appreciate you sharing kind of later on in life where God has challenged you and you're answering that call.
Apparently he's not done with me.
That's right. That's right. That's good. That's good. Yeah. Greg, share with us.
Yeah. So I'll be the prototype, and mine actually is earlier in my time. So I grew up in the church, pastor's kid, and was always engaged in the church, and but really kind of had all that up in my head. Like, it was definitely a faith in my head, and was in a pretty horrific car accident actually when I was younger, and thrown from the vehicle. The doctors told my parents that I had a 10% chance of living, and they actually told my parents that I would either die or have brain damage for the rest of my life. I went from that to actually attending church camp 8 weeks later, and so, like, it was fascinating to see that. But in the midst of it, I bumped into a woman who saw the car accident. She saw the whole thing happen. And she immediately began praying for whoever it was that happened to be in this car accident. And she just happened to be the woman who was in charge of the prayer ministry at the church my mom grew up in. And so by the time I got to the hospital, I had hundreds of people praying for me, and I didn't know anything about that. And about 4 weeks after the surgery, I had the opportunity to talk with her. And it was that where I was like, oh, this following Jesus thing, there's a lot more to that than just what you know in your head, right? So it's really kind of there where discipleship, that's what I call CBTE, is really just a deep journey of discipleship. And that's kind of where it started for me is, oh, there's wow. more to following Jesus.
What a fantastic story, even demonstrating the sovereignty of God too, and working out all of these details for that woman to be the one who saw it, who prayed, who was connected. And it is neat. It set a trajectory for you. And I'm sure it's impacted, even like you just said, how you approach CBTE as deep discipleship. So thank you both for sharing that. So let's dive in to our topic. And the first question I'm going to point towards you, Greg. CBTE is not necessarily a new concept in higher education. We hear about it often. I remember attending conferences 8-10 years ago, and everybody was doing or talking about competency-based education, competency-based theological education. And everyone came back from those conferences and went back to their campuses and says, we've got to do this. Well, what is it? I don't know, but we got to do it. So it's been on the scene for a little bit, and it's definitely something that's gaining traction. Give us kind of a high-level description. What is it? When we're talking about CBTE, exactly what is it?
That's a great question, and I really appreciate your reference to the fact that it's not new, right? Because I think sometimes people get caught up in the idea that it is new, and the most current stuff really finds its roots even back in the 50s and in the 70s with some of the stuff Averno College was doing. So it isn't new. Actually, the structured approach to learning that we tend to assume, that's the new thing. That really only came around in the late 1800s. And by the early 1900s, people already hated it. So like, it's not a new thing. It's an old thing. And the difference, or really what it's about, competency-based learning is primarily about about learners making progress by demonstrating proficiency. So instead of time or what people study or how they study or pathways for learning, it's really that progress is marked by demonstrating proficiency. That's the big shift. And then in competency-based theological education, it's kind of putting a theological lens on the concept of education. So we are followers of Jesus. We would suggest that means we have a different understanding of what it means to know something. To know something means to demonstrate and integrate content, so cognitive awareness, but also character, who we are in Christ and how that content shapes us, and our craft, so what we do with it. So with competency-based theological education, we're really putting an intentional lens on that integrated dimension of knowing. So you have to demonstrate content, you have to demonstrate character, you have to demonstrate craft. And that's probably the thing that separates it from competency. Both are still proficiency-based learning. It really is. You make progress when you demonstrate proficiency. That's it. There's no such thing in CBE. There's no such thing as C's get degrees. That's not how it works. It's you either have demonstrated the proficiency or you have not. That's what it is. But with CBTE, we really wanted to lean into, well, we are about developing followers of Jesus who flourish in their vocations. And so content, character, and craft are all brought together. Is that fair, Kent?
Yeah. And what's interesting, yeah, which I love about it, and you reference education, it's actually the formal education that we experience is actually the new thing. The core of competency-based education is demonstrating that you have proficiency. And I like that too, that once you've achieved a competency, it's not like you've arrived, but you've met a certain threshold that life experiences, you continue to fine tune that competency. That education is not this point in time where we learn everything that we absolutely have to learn, and now we're prepared for everything that life sends our way. We all know that that's not the case. Our experiences teach us, and if we have those basic competencies, we only enhance those competencies. So you're almost rewiring how we approach education.
Yeah, the phrase I use is it's a developmental mindset rather than a transactional one. We're not engaged in an educational process for some sort of a transaction. Like, I do this, you give me that. I do this, you give me a degree. I do this, you give me. It's actually just engaging in an ongoing development process, which is what discipleship is, right? We are constantly learning what it means to follow and practice the way of Jesus. And so this is just putting that in the context of an educational organization, but that's what it is.
And it seems to me this is the way Jesus trained his disciples. So yeah. We're in good stead.
Yeah, very true. So Kent, and this kind of fits exactly with this, but I want you to go a little bit deeper with it. What is it about CBTE that fits so naturally within our sector of biblical and theological higher education?
I mean, it fits to our mission, fits to our theology, and in particular, I want to talk about the church. I mean, you can use this methodology to train all kinds of people, and at Providence, we've got lots of different products and approaches. But if we're talking about preparing people for the church, I think it's the task of the church to develop leadership for itself, to call out those people who show evidence of gifting and calling, and to mentor them, to encourage them, to build them up. And for a long time, we sort of offloaded or contracted that function out to schools. And that probably wasn't the smartest move we ever made. A lot of churches would come to me, and like I've been in this business for a long time, and churches would call me and they say, do you have any good graduates coming up? Do you have anybody coming forward that could help us at our church? And I just felt like that was the wrong approach. The school is not a pastor store or a leader store. We are at the place that is, when rightly understood, we ought to come alongside the church and help the church fulfill its mission to develop the people that God has given the church with gifts and calling. And so big thing for us, when I started going down this road 13 years ago now, it was really about trying to understand how to do a better job of serving the church in its mission to develop its leaders. So I just think that's good theology. And I always try to follow our theological commitments out to practical consequences, even as it relates to how we run our schools. And so that's why it fits for me.
No, I think that, I mean, the church is to be about the work of developing leaders for the church. I would just add in, and you started with this, Kent, that it's not relegated to just degrees for pastors or degrees for missionaries. This concept of competency-based theological education applies to, like, we have fighter pilots and we have real estate agents and we have financial brokers. Like, this is, if you love Jesus and want to integrate your faith and your work, this is a good way to do it because it forces you to connect your faith and your practice through that content, character, and craft. There's an integration.
And I would just add to that, Greg, that speaks to the kind of leadership that the church needs to look to, which isn't just strictly professional. We have those fighter pilots ought to be in churches, helping lead and doing it theologically.
Biblical Higher Ed Talk is sponsored by ABHE, the Association for Biblical Higher Education. At ABHE, bringing the love and light of Christ to the world is reflected in our drive to see our member institutions flourish, leading them to a time of success for their institution and giving them the tools and insights they need to look toward the future. Interested in learning more about membership with ABHE? Visit us at abhe.org or send us an email to membership@abhe.org. ABHE is your partner committed to advancing biblical higher education for kingdom impact. Now, back to the show.
Have either of you, you mentioned this, Kent and Greg, you referenced it kind of in your response there, that farming out, you know, the history of biblical and theological education started in the context of the church. So our founding is in the church, right? And so over time, that separation has happened. Have you noted, like, what caused that? Was it something over time? Was it something within the context of the church? Was it education? What caused that deviation to start that churches were like, well, it's not our responsibility, and we're just going to farm that responsibility out to the seminaries? Why did we decide to do that?
I think, I mean, we say a little bit of this in the book, and Kent's done some really good writing on it. I don't know that it was anything intentional. Like, no one woke up in the morning and said, you know what we should do is this, this, this. I think it's just over time, there was this, as local churches or as denominations or as schools began to work toward the things they felt they were called to, they just began to drift farther and farther apart. I think you could probably look at the professionalization of ministry as one of the things that started us down that path. I could also look at the church's adoption of the German academic model, not local churches, the body of Christ, the adoption of that as the thing to do. Both of those end up creating people in that image. So professionalism creates people in the image of professionalism. The academy creates people in the image of the academy. Neither one of those are really focusing on creating people in the image of Christ. And so we started just looking past, I think is the phrase you've used, Kent, is the church started looking past the school and the school started looking past the church. Is that fair, Kent?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a lot of touch points we could look at here, but I think just following the models offered us in the culture. So when higher education became a big thing culturally, for anything, you know, Greg used the word professionalization. You know, when we think about the professions, the clergy became a profession. And so it required this level, or at least it was thought to require this kind of education. And then in some of the worlds that we represent through ABAG and some of the schools that maybe we were, you know, some of the Bible college background folks, that wasn't necessarily the emphasis early on. But I think as schools have had to deepen their sense of financial viability and their offer to the market, we have tended to professionalize our schools. And that's not a terrible thing. You know, there's a lot of good that has come out of that, a lot of good. But we have felt, Greg and I have felt that, and others, that maybe we need to go back to some things and find some things that maybe we'd forgotten a little bit in our approach to offer a credible product to students and to those who would invest in what we do. We maybe should be thinking a little more about the outcome as it relates to the church and the church's mission in the world.
First institution where I served, actually, when you talked about the professionalization of ministry, it was actually in the mission statement, preparing for professional Christian ministry were the last three words of the mission statement. And that, look, everything's intention, right? And we swing pendulums. And it feels like the modernist era put us into a defensive mode of having to prove, okay, scientifically, we can say that we have a reason for why we exist and we're going to professionalize it and we're going to protect it. But that's a pendulum reaction. That's a reactive mode. And it sounds like what you all are doing, which I absolutely love, is kind of, you're not swinging the pendulum the other way and saying, well, we don't need any formal theological education. We just need to be responsive to the Holy Spirit and he'll give us exactly what we need. No, there's a place for it, but we're not swinging the pendulum all the way
over. We're trying to integrate the strengths that schools can bring with what the church can bring is its strength as well. And we still need quality. Actually, you know, the argument you just were talking about, Philip, is one of the things that we've had to fight extra hard as we've pressed toward CBT and these kinds of programs in schools. A lot of times people question whether it's academic enough, whether it's meet standards to, you know, whether the content is high enough. And, you know, we have great answers for all those questions and show people why we think it does meet every standard that anybody could possibly expect. It's really more about what is it we're trying to achieve here? Are we trying to, like as Greg said earlier, check boxes and tests of you know, academic prowess, or is it about actually being formed for the purposes that God is calling us to, developing and demonstrating such so that people can actually see it, so that the kingdom is built, the gospel goes forth, the world is transformed, and all these things we love and care about and find in Scripture are actually achieved. We're not so sure that. The classic academic model is built for that.
Yeah. Greg, if listeners are probably fall in the same category that I did with conferences, they've heard about it. They've maybe read some articles about it. If you were to sit down and have a conversation with them, what would you say are some of the essential elements an institution must have in place in order for CBTE to be successful?
Yeah, well, and in the book, we have six principles and six practices for those. And we get into things about affordability and how you design systems. And there's some good stuff in there. And I'm not going to, you know, rehash all of that here, because as I was looking at it and thinking about it, Philip, what I think a big shift, like a big mindset or thing that a school needs to have in place is they need to work through and think about the way in which I would probably use the phrase radical collaboration is going to be necessary to lean into competency-based education of any sort. It's collaboration with partners, collaboration with students, collaboration internally across faculty and staff. And our approach to higher education tends not to do that kind of radical collaboration. We have shared governance, which tend to be siloed collaboration. We tend to have our relationships with the market or with other people tend to be an us and a them thing. And this kind of radical collaboration invites schools to give away power that they used to have. It invites faculty, board, people to let down power they used to have. And that kind of collaboration is not very easy to come by. And so whatever it is you do, whatever kinds of programs and things you're going to do, the first step, I think, is that this is a philosophy, not a model. You don't want to just replicate a model because you can actually harm people if you're just replicating models. But you embrace it as a philosophy, and that philosophy is going to require you to think differently about how you collaborate with others. That's probably the biggest essential thing that has to be in place. And then how that gets worked out in your context might vary widely, but you are going to ask some questions you haven't asked before.
Yeah. Which speaks to the culture of the organization, right? That it's not online education, right? It's not like, okay, well, we're just going to bring in CBTE to complement our online education and our face-to-face. So our three delivery methodologies are CBTE, online education, and face-to-face. I've heard it described that way so many times. It's like, no, that's not what it is. And
yeah, it's a fundamental change in how you think about what it means to assess learning, for instance. And so if you're collaborating radically, you're going to allow people voice and vote in the assessment process that you've never allowed into that process before. You're going to not only allow it, but require it, right? So in our world at Kairos, students have a mentor team, and every person on that team, whether they are a faculty with a credential or a local pastor who's never been to a seminary, they all have voice and vote within that team. And that is an entirely different way of collaborating around assessment. And so it's an important way, but it's very different. You were going to say something, Kent.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, Greg. I want to say to your comment, Philip, this is a true paradigm shift in education. You really do have to come at it from the other end. And what I mean by that is conventionally, we've understood that we have this school that has a mission that has to sustain itself. And so what do we need to sustain itself? We need students. Where do we find, how do we attract students? Well, we promise them degrees and credit and all of this. And so we create systems. And we're saying, no, that's backwards. Let's start with the outcome. And that's why I've said quite a bit about the church. I mean, as Greg said, it can be broader than just the local church. But we start with the end in mind. And we say, okay, what is it that we're actually trying to achieve in the world that's going to enhance God's kingdom? And then we work backwards toward the school. And the school has to be willing to shape itself in such that it can achieve the outcome, because that's what really matters. And so it affects things like Greg's saying, partnership, collaboration, sharing of power. One really key thing for me is the whole thing around context, you know, as opposed to classroom. Classroom is a relatively sterile environment, which is a really good place to dump content, but a really bad place to assess a character or assess the utilization of content. And so what we're saying is, you know, one of the guys I worked with for a long time on this used to say, his name is David Herita, he would always say the context is the classroom. And so whether that be a church or a ministry environment or just a workplace or whatever it is, you know, that's where the real learning happens. Let's figure out as schools how to come alongside and build on what's going on the ground in context. And that's going to mean things like customization. You know, you got to create a system that allows for, it's going to mean we change financial models. It's going to address how we deal with assessment, how we deal with approvals, just almost everything.
Yeah.
Almost everything.
Yeah.
light touches, you're going to.
And that's why I think it's so important, Greg, that you mentioned the single thing is just that readiness of a campus to have that collaboration. And I encourage listeners to look in the book, because you all provide fantastic, very practical things that institutions ought to consider first before they even put their toe into this water. Kent, what have you seen that just like is oil and water, like totally works against an educational philosophy of CBTE?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to frame that question. I would probably say just about everything that you customarily identify as relating to schools. Like
credit, seat time, like, classrooms, professors, transcripts.
Like, okay, semesters. Yeah. Let's take semesters for a minute. Who came up with that brilliant idea? Basically, we're saying that you've got this particular area of learning, and we'll give you 3.5 months to lock that down, and then we'll never talk about it again. And so the student, you know, does the best they can, you know, when they're doing well within that period, and then we take their measure at the end of that time and give them what they've earned, and that's it. Well, wait a minute. You know, what if 3.5 months wasn't enough? You know, what if another couple of months we could have got that student further or stronger? You know, like semesters are arbitrary amounts of time, and time is not the best way to measure proficiency.
Now, to be fair, to be fair, some schools do have trimesters.
Okay. Okay. You know what I'm saying? The other thing, seat time. I mean, the idea that by sitting in a chair, you know, in a classroom, that's the proof of anything. You know, in other words, you sit in a particular class under a certain professor's leadership for X number of weeks, and therefore you have credibility in this area. Well, maybe, but probably not. There's other ways to measure. Syllabi, where it's one size fits all scenario. So every single student has to do the exact same work. That's kind of inefficient. You know, what if a student doesn't need to do, you know, has already read this book or already has mastered or shown proficiency of this particular piece? Maybe they would be better served spending their time on something else. Could we create a system that allows more customization to the needs of the student? Can we figure out how to write syllabi or curriculum that allows for that? Assessment systems. I mean, almost everything. One thing that I really want to just camp on for a minute. I think one of the, I've spent most of my life, I mean, I was a pastor, but I've spent a good deal of my life as a faculty member and then as a dean and president and everything. But I know firsthand just how much faculty identity is wrapped up in formal presentation. You know, we talk about the sage on the stage. We get our sense of identity if we can, you know, spill forth our wisdom on whatever our particular issue is. And I have come to believe, and I'm taking this personally, like I had to do this for myself. I had to get over myself. I mean, literally. I'm a homiletician. I've taught homiletics and communication for more than 30 years. I love my stuff. I think I'm a really good teacher. I think my students have done well when they sit with me. But I had to get over myself. And I had to realize that there's probably better ways to develop communicators than what I... Not that my content didn't matter. It does matter. There's just other ways to get that to people and to utilize it so that we can actually achieve the purpose. So I'm trying to say this with love to my sisters and brothers and faculty, but we really do have to get over ourselves and really start to think about what our mission is and what the best, most effective way is to achieve the mission, rather than just trying to support our own sense of identity.
Yeah, that is so well said. And it's our human condition, right? It's so much in life is about getting over ourselves. We are the star of our narrative, and that runs so counter to how God works. And he is the center story of the narrative. And it's a question of how do we step into that? And
it's scary.
Sure it is, because yeah. our dependence, our sense of being, how we've been taught, our whole structures of they're safe. So we're going to be defensive and try to protect what is safe to us. And to actually open-handedly kind of give that out, that's not a, that's, that can work against CBTE for sure. Yeah, good. Well, listen, we've got just a minute left, and I'd like to, each one of you to answer this last question. So listeners are saying, okay, maybe we want to kick the tires of this thing. What would you say is the first step? Very practical. What's the first step that they ought to take? Greg, we'll start with you and then Ken.
I actually think there's an article written by Amy Layton called Cracking the Credit Hour. It's a really good, it has nothing to do with CBTE and everything to do with the arbitrary nature of credit hours. And that's a really good first step to thinking differently about learning. After that, the best thing to do is to talk to somebody who's doing it. It doesn't have to be Kent, doesn't have to be me. Obviously, we're happy to do that, but talk to somebody who has been doing it for a little while. Those are the first two things I would suggest.
Yeah, I hear there's a pretty good ABHE conference coming up on this subject, and I'll be there. I'll be there and happy to share. People can call us. You can read the book, of course. But you know, in terms of building, one thing I encourage schools to think about is trying to build something like you don't have to like throw everything over all at once. In fact, that almost never works. You know, so what we typically encourage is to work on building something to the side and feed it and water it and let it grow and see what happens. You know, that's less threatening to people, but it also allows for freedom for that thing to really grow and take off. And so there's lots of things we could talk to folks about how to do that. But yeah, it doesn't have, you don't have to just turn everything upside down right out of the gate, because that might not go well for you.
Well, Greg and Kent, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your wisdom. And to our listeners, I've had opportunity to engage with Kent quite a bit and Greg just a couple of times, but I hear your heart and I see that you all are approaching this as we're willing to help. It doesn't have to be a certain way. This is not about Greg and it's not about Kent. There's a bigger picture at play. It's the kingdom of God. And you've been down the road and you're in a unique position and you've written your book this way to say, look, we made some mistakes along the way. So if you're serious about this journey, we can actually help you be a little bit more efficient and not step into some of those potholes, pitfalls that you all did as you walked and pioneered CBTE. And I also want to say that the book that Greg and Kent have written, ABHE is funding a portion of that book being mailed to all of our ABHE presidents. So in the next couple of months, I think the book comes out in March. Those of you who are presidents, about 162 of you, presidents of ABHE institutions, will be receiving that book for free. If there are other listeners who are interested in the book in the show description, we'll put a link to the Amazon page where you can make that order. And we'll also put there the contact information for Greg and Kent. They really want to hear from you. If this is something that you want to consider at your institution, please do reach out to Greg and Kent. So both of you, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate your wisdom and practical advice for us. So until next time, stay kingdom focused.
Thanks for listening to Biblical Higher Ed Talk. For more, follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform. We're delighted that you chose to spend a part of your day with us and encourage you to reach out to us with feedback, topics, or guests for the show. You can get in touch with Philip, your host, via LinkedIn or at biblicalhigheredtalk@abhe.org. Biblical Higher Ed Talk is a production of the Association for Biblical Higher Education in association with Westport Studios. Views expressed on this show are those of the participants and may not reflect the views of ABHE or Westport Studios. Bring light and life to your biblical higher educational organization by inquiring about membership with ABHE at abhe.org. We'll catch you next time.